Court. Good evening and welcome to this episode of the Full Press NFL Podcast. The first day of free agency is definitely off to a chaotic start. Your host Terrence Biz with me always is the social media manager, all things fullpresscoverage.com, and the managing editor of Full Press Chiefs, Braden Hollacek. What's going on, Braden?
Doing really well, trying to keep catching up and stay up to date with all these updates today. But it's definitely exciting, and I would say some big news that we probably expected some guys to go, but still some shockers out there that have made for a intriguing Monday.
For those who may not know, Brayden, when you see a lot of the graphics on our Twitter site, which is at Full Press NFL, Brayden keeps up on these. Brayden is probably tired of looking at Canva at this point.
For sure, yeah. Trying to get everything sized too. It's sometimes quick, but I have to kind of pace myself at sometimes too.
It has been a wild day to say. Oh, Lord, the very least. Now, I guess we will start with, I'm not even sure. Oh, we'll start here. Kirk Cousins is now signed a 4-year, $180 million deal with $100 million guaranteed. Guaranteed at signing will be $90 million. Kirk Cousins is the greatest money-making quarterback that I will ever see in my lifetime. He's also about 35 and a half years old. What do the Falcons hope here, Braden?
I think the Falcons kind of look at themselves, I would assume they kind of envision it as maybe being a quarterback away, a competent quarterback away from at least being able to make the playoffs in a weaker NFC South. You mentioned it. I think it was Adam Schefter who said by the time this contract runs out, Kirk Cousins will have earned roughly $400 million in his career. So yeah, he's done pretty well for himself as a businessman. I think the intriguing thing contract wise to me is 4-year deal for his age. I know he's coming off the injury, so I kind of thought he'd get at least a 2-year deal, but for 4 years in Atlanta, I think Arthur Blank is the owner is really probably the biggest one wanting to go all in here after seeing guys like Desmond Ridder and obviously Taylor Heinicke, guys that have not been obviously foundational pieces after Matt Ryan, try to get them back over the hump. So yeah, another great business move for Cousins. I think the good thing for him in this environment with Atlanta, he's a steady quarterback who's going to be able to have a pretty good cast of weapons here, and even that offensive line I think has been solid for the Falcons. So to me, it's probably a battle between them and the Bucks right now in the NFC South.
If Kirk Cousins is healthy, Falcons win 9 games. It is that much better than whatever that nonsense that Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heinicke would. It's not, by all estimations, a sexy pick or a splash pick as far as the signing. It's effective. And you got to give Arthur Blank credit. Arthur Blank has taken so many L's in Atlanta as far as publicity wise and just incurring the anger of the fan base. This is smart. Now, this one surprised me, but I'm rather happy. Christian Wilkins, 4 years, $110 million to the Las Vegas Raiders. He will average $27.5 million a year, which is kind of high, but his guaranteed money is $84.7 million. What do you think?
I kind of continue to say this on Twitter. To me, I know they have some financial questions, and there's going to be some guys coming up for them to pay. But I still can't believe the Dolphins didn't even at least tag Christian Wilkins. Just seems like a big, energetic guy, a locker room guy that's walking out the door for them that everybody loves in Miami. So for me, the Raiders, I kind of view it obviously in the AFC West as a Chiefs guy. The Raiders are building a pretty good defensive line. You have Max Crosby, who's still, I think, to a degree, underrated in some aspects and flies under the radar at times. But obviously, with this move, he's going to have a lot of one-on-one opportunities. And Wilkins, I think the thing you love about him, he can play both the run and the pass, all three downs. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, played the highest amount of snaps last year as a defensive tackle in the NFL. So he's a guy I think you can rely on. And like you said, if you're a Raiders fan, I think you have to be pretty excited about this just because he's been pretty reliable and consistent so far in his career.
The excitement from Raider fans was immediately snuffed out a little bit later on, but we'll get to that probably after the break. But here we'll stay on this and watching Miami just disintegrate. They let Robert Hunt guard go to Carolina, 4 years, 100 million, and about $63 million in signing bonus, in guaranteed money. Two part question for you. How does he help the Panthers, and why are the Dolphins just like you said, continuing to misfire?
I think the biggest thing for Carolina, yeah, you had to do all you could, obviously, to protect Bryce Young better than you did in his rookie season. I think the thing that's been intriguing for Hunt is at his size, been able to move pretty well as a guard on the inside. I think has pretty good athleticism, but also his hand technique is something that you don't really have to worry about. So I think this is a great move for the Panthers. The money for the guard position, I know some people always question that as far as the people that really focus on the cap hits and the salary and everything. But yeah, for Miami, it's tough for a guy like Tua that doesn't really have the mobility and I think awareness sometimes to realize interior pressure and stepping up in the pocket and evading that. So for Miami, I think they're probably a pretty good bet to maybe draft, say, like a Jackson Powers Johnson or Graham Barton in round one, in my opinion, to kind of replace him. But honestly, of the Dolphins' issues at offensive line, Robert Hunt to me has been one of the least of their issues for a while.
Also, a guy to probably figure for the Miami in second round, Cooper Beebe, guard, Kansas State,
Right.
would definitely step in into that role. But staying in the AFC, actually going from the AFC to the NFC, Jonathan Greenard, the defensive end from the Texans, signs a 4 year, $76 million deal with $42 million guaranteed. That's a lot of money, but he's young. He's coming off 12 and a half sacks. How do you rate this deal as far as production versus price?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I probably didn't expect him to get this high of a price. He did miss some time. I want to say, what was it, 2022? Had a foot injury and an ankle injury that he kind of dealt with. So when he's been on the field, I think he's been pretty productive. But I don't think his production so far is something that I anticipated meeting this price for Minnesota. And they make a couple other defensive moves. So defensive coordinator Brian Flores, he gets a guy he kind of knows from his Miami days and Andrew Van Ginkle, and then a Minnesota native linebacker Blake Cashman comes over from the Texans. So going to be interesting to see how Flores kind of deploys all these defensive pieces because Grenard's kind of a true defensive end. Van Ginkle's a little bit more of a outside linebacker stand up player. So the Vikings honestly surprised me. They obviously weren't perfect, but surprised me how much they were able to get out of their defense last year. Now they have some pieces that have kind of been there and done that.
I like the deal because you're facing Jordan Love, Jared Goff. You need to be able to get them off of the pocket and to be able to make them run around a little bit. This helps. And Greenard is definitely good against the run. Staying in the NFC North, Xavier McKinney goes from the Giants to the Packers. 4 years, $68 million. He's making $17 million. He's not 25 yet, but Britt, I gotta tell you, this seems like this is like a lot of money.
Yeah, it does. I think you look at the safety market too. There was a lot of safeties available, so I didn't really know how many teams would pay big for McKinney. Obviously, he's kind of younger than a lot of the other guys available, but it was, I guess, so much mixed results for me with the Giants that I just wouldn't have guessed he would have probably landed a number this big. Felt like the Eagles were the other team that was in it based on what I saw, but for the Packers, I think you have to be pretty excited to get a guy like this when the secondary has had their ups and downs over the years, even with the pieces they've relied on with premium assets. So new defensive coordinator, it'll be interesting to see how this group kind of is different maybe than what they've been previously. But yeah, I think for this safety group, I probably didn't expect this high of a price point for Xavier McKinney.
The price point was high, but then when you look deeper in it, he's only surrendered 5 touchdowns in a 4 year career, nine picks. You have a quarterback complete about 60-ish% of their passes when they target him. I can see it. It's just $17 million a year is a lot of money, and it just that ugh. It's a win now for the Packers.
For sure. Yeah, I was just gonna add, I mean, I would expect him and his team to probably work towards an extension before the year starts, but if he plays on the tag, that's about the same salary that Antoine Winfield Jr. will have in 2024. So, pretty wild to see that number for sure.
This one is interesting because with the retirement of Fletcher Cox, I thought that the Eagles would go into looking at defensive tackles, but then they have Jordan Davis, they have Jalen Carter, so they're solid there. They go for situational pass rusher Bryce Huff, 3 years, $51 million. That is a lot of money for a situational pass rusher. And they're also gonna let Josh Sweat go. Do you think that Huff can immediately come in to be an every down outside linebacker?
I would definitely have some pause. He's obviously, like you said, been more of a situational rotational piece. I actually have a friend who's a Jets fan that just hates how much Robert Saleh rotates guys in and out as often as he does. But yeah, the history of, I guess, consistent snaps isn't really there for Bryce Huff. I think you look at kind of the buzz around him. It seemed like the Eagles were going to be the most aggressive going after him. So I don't know if I'm surprised with the landing spot. Hassan Reddick has had a trade request, or he's been permission to seek a trade. Josh Sweat's kind of been shopped around, so I don't really know what to anticipate the final product looking like for the Eagles in the trenches. But for Bryce Huff, this is definitely going to be a big gamble with this price point for Bryce Huff in Philadelphia.
To me, also what stands out is he only played 42% of the snaps last year and 20% of snaps the year before. I wonder how this is going to affect his effectiveness, knowing that he's going to have to produce. A lot of these teams and players are happy that they're making this money, but with that money comes severe expectations. Do you see him possibly with those two giant defensive tackles up front being able to rack up consistent double-digit sack seasons?
I don't know if I would say for sure on that. I think he definitely has a chance to get there, at least one or two of those years. I don't know if I'd say I'd bet on that for all 3 years of the deal, but I think the thing that you have to love about the Eagles, based on their history, I think with getting guys production is they've been able to win a lot with these speed guys and kind of open them up for free runs at the quarterback. So I think the scheme wise, I could buy it a little bit, but I would not consistently bet on that production.
Next on the list, we have offensive guard Jonah Jackson, late of the Lions, now of the LA Rams. 3 years, $51 million, $34 million guaranteed. That is a lot of cash, also, but it looks at me like the Rams are going to try to mount up for one last go at it with Matthew Stafford. Do you think that you have a Kyron Williams as their running back? Do you think a guard like Jackson will also help, of course, but is this a sound investment?
I think so. I think just because he's been a pretty durable player, even though he's, I think dealt with some nagging injuries this past season and into the playoffs. But the toughness that he has, I think coming over from that regime in Detroit really can't hurt, in my opinion, coming over to the Rams. Like you mentioned, they have Kyron Williams, who kind of has come onto the scene in a big way for the running back position as a young player. So, yeah, one last run with Matthew Stafford. I think this is a group that obviously really impressed with a lot of young players in certain spots last year. So I think to kind of beef up the offensive line, though, with the proven guy going into the draft is definitely, I think, a wise move for the Rams.
It definitely will be interesting. I want to take a quick timeout and then jump right back in his list and kind of get Braden's takes on what he sees, what he likes, and what he doesn't like. But that's after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Full Press NFL podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press NFL podcast. Terrence Biggs, Braden Holacek. Braden, this one is interesting to me. Josh Jacobs is now a Green Bay Packer. 4 years, $48 million. Only 12 and a half guaranteed. As someone who covers the Raiders and has followed the Raiders, I'm not mad at this for everyone involved because it seems as though Jacobs is going to be able to step into a win now team and he gets his money, which he definitely that was what his main goal was. And two, this probably means the end of Aaron Jones. If you are the Packers, I know people want to re-sign Aaron Jones, but if you're the Packers, how smart is this clean break? And if you're Aaron Jones, if the Packers come to you once again with your third time in the last couple of years of reducing your salary, do you just hang up the phone at this point?
I think so. Yeah, I actually would not be surprised if he had a wide array of suitors that are seeing themselves as contenders or as known contenders anyway. So I don't think Jones is going to be necessarily in a bad spot. But yeah, Jacobs definitely not the team that I would have had him going to. But I think the good thing for him is you're going to get a lot of chances still to tote the rock each week. It's going to be a balanced approach, I think, with Matt LaFleur calling the plays and leading the way. And I think it's a nice style to kind of complement the game of Jordan Love, who can win really well off play action. Isn't one of these guys that has to go strictly out of shotgun either. So you can kind of really keep defenses on their toes, in my opinion, with the physicality of Jacobs, the toughness that he has in between the tackles, and a little bit of, maybe more short area burst than what they've had from some of their other backs in the past. So to me, it's definitely an intriguing move by the Packers, and we might get to the other running back that went to the Eagles here in a second, but definitely for him, it's at least probably a worthy deal for what the running back position is kind of needed in their depressed market.
After watching him his entire rated career, he makes people miss. He is a solid back, sturdy, still actually has the ability to run away from people. Here's a little quick tidbit. His next touchdown reception will be his first. So he is definitely a two-down back, but if they can somehow teach him how to hold on to the rock and actually catch it in the red zone, Packers will have something, and I can't be mad at that. Now, Gabe Davis is a guy that we both agree we didn't see how he would have suitors. Well, he found one. The Jaguars decided to give him 3 years and $39 million. That's a lot of cash for somebody who doesn't catch 60% of his passes. Are they hoping that he somehow refines his technique, or at this point, are the Jags this desperate?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the thing that could help him definitely regain his form or find himself in Jacksonville is there's at least, I think, a little bit more pieces around him depth wise, that he doesn't have to necessarily be a top two receiver on the board or on the depth chart for the Jaguars. You obviously had a really good player in Stephon Diggs around him in Buffalo, but I think the quantity of the pieces in Jacksonville and how Doug Peterson uses everyone will definitely help. The thing though that I had kind of buyer's beware over is this is a guy that just not the most smooth as far as a route runner goes. Creating that separation isn't always something that's consistent snap to snap. So it'll be interesting to see, I guess, if he's given more chances on the outside strictly, or if Doug Peterson will try to move him around a little bit. The thing that's always funny to me in Jacksonville, it's just spending spree, it seems like more than any team the first day that they're able to do it. And it always feels like guys that you just wonder if they're even going to reach the full length of their deal. I know this is only a 3-year deal for a young player, but just seems like the Jags are always kind of almost a year-to-year operation on how to really view them.
Now, this one you mentioned earlier, and we kind of talked about it last week a little bit as being a possible destination. Saquon Barkley is now a Philadelphia Eagle after 3 years and a $37.75 million deal with $26 million guaranteed at signature. Do you believe that staying in a division will give him the motivation to kind of show not just the current fan base, the players and the Eagles management, but his former fan base, teammates and management, what they missed out on, and how much vengeance you think he will run with this season?
I think he'll definitely run with a lot of vengeance. I think as far as staying to the NFC East and yeah, really being able to prove some of those others wrong. I think the biggest thing is the opportunities to really be, I think, the kind of player that people envisioned him being entering the NFL, kind of this versatile piece, dual threat back, and make catches out of the backfield. Really kind of do it all for what you need a running back to do, I think, in today's NFL. He has the capabilities to do that, and I just think probably a little bit more well-rounded than any running back the Eagles have had the last few years. I think obviously Miles Sanders took him a little bit while to get going in Philly, but had a great last year there production-wise, and then we saw what DeAndre Swift did last year. So if there's anything that we know from running backs with the Eagles, the top guys usually been able to produce heavily. So and kind of like Jacobs for me, Saquon kind of probably gets the number that he was hoping for, or close to that all along with what he's gonna have chance to earn there in Philly. So I think Texans was always kind of a fun spot that I really would have loved to see for Saquon, just with CJ Stroud and how big of a fan I am with him. But ultimately, I think this is still one of the best places that he could have went to, and actually threw some money on this betting wise over the weekend that Eagles is where he would play his first snap next year. So I'll definitely enjoy that little bit of extra cash as well.
This one is, I have no idea. The Titans decided to go the opposite from what they've had as far as a running back. They went from power running back who got tough yards to a smaller running back who doesn't get tough yards. Tony Pollard, 3 years, $24 million. What are the Titans doing?
I have no idea. I will say I still kind of like Tony Pollard as a player, but he's probably more of a guy that has to be in a duo at this point. I just don't get, as a team that obviously doesn't have a lot of premium draft capital, I want to say they don't have maybe any or only one day two pick this year. You have a young quarterback in Will Levis, obviously. You struggled as an offensive line last year, one of the probably more weaker units on paper around the league for that position. So for me, I don't really know how much Pollard is going to outsnap Tyjae Spears. I kind of would assume that they're going to use both of them heavily, but yeah, I don't get the spending on kind of low cost positions or non-premium positions as much as they have the last few years. Kind of a newer regime, but just seems like something the Titans have been able to kind of floor us with year after year.
One of my favorite signings of the day was the Bears signing DeAndre Swift. 3 years, $24 million. You have a back who can get tough yards, puts his shoulder down, but also is excellent in the open field. Are we living in a opposite world where the Bears are actually making sense with these signings?
I think so. I did not see the hype around the Bears as much as some people did last year, but I think the way they finished the season and some of the pieces they've already brought in, I probably have a little bit more buy-in to them this season than maybe I did last year. Obviously, if they draft Caleb Williams at number one, I think this is a really fun stylistic running back to kind of pair him with someone that can run in between the tackles, but also if you get him out in space, can make guys miss. Really kind of find those extra tough hidden yards as well. So he's kind of a versatile piece to me that definitely still has some tread left on the tires.
Now, this one is another head scratcher. Kobe Parkinson, tight end, stays in the NFC West, goes from Seattle to the Rams. This is a player who hasn't had more than 25 receptions, averages 10.8 yards a catch, 4 career touchdowns. Why are teams, I'm not going to single out the Rams, but why are teams throwing money at average to marginal players?
I don't really understand it, honestly, with the tight ends sometimes. I think you look at the best players in the league, like Kelce, a Kittle. I think there's times where they're underpaid, but then you look at some of these other depth guys that are able to land these big deals. I don't really understand how the league views tight ends, I guess, in terms of extensions versus free agency. So it's definitely surprising. I guess there's probably a worse offense he could have went to with the pieces there, the quarterback, and obviously the offensive kind of game plan guy. So I guess for him, it's probably a great landing spot, but yeah, definitely not a deal I would have expected to see as far as big price point.
Who is one player that you were surprised that didn't kind of hook on and sign for a good contract early?
I think the wide receiver position, I have not really seen obviously a whole lot there. I mean, if I had to single out one player in particular, I would probably go with Calvin Ridley, just because kind of the stuff we heard, I think just from certain reports, it seemed like there was going to be teams willing to pay him wide receiver one money, and maybe that price point will still come for him. But little surprised the receivers have not come off the board yet. Marquise Brown, another name to watch. You have some other guys like Curtis Samuel, Josh Reynolds, Darnell Mooney. Those are guys I'm kind of watching from the Chiefs' perspective, but also just the price point in general to see what they're able to fetch on this year's market. The wide receiver market obviously continuing to go up, but out of all of them, I guess Calvin Ridley seems like a lot of teams interested, but still waiting to see who pounces on him.
I'll go with Danielle Hunter. People need edge rush help. He will get you double digit sacks or somewhere close to it each season. He just kind of hanging out there. Him and Leonard Williams. I saw that Justin Simmons. I know that being 30, that might be a little cost prohibitive, but Buda Baker's a name. Eddie Jackson also being 30. DJ Reader is just kind of sitting there, and I kind of wonder what's going to be what. Who do you expect to be signed in the next 24 hours?
I think honestly, I would probably look to hold on a second. Let me pull it up just to make sure. There was a couple names I was thinking of just a second ago. Besides a wide receiver position, I think there's definitely going to be a few defenders that are interesting to me when I kind of look at the front seven. I think there's one name that is definitely going to be somebody that could probably fetch a pretty good price point. When you look at Josh Uche coming over from the Patriots, defensive end, a little bit smaller guy compared to some others around the league, but has the speed and quickness still, along with the length to really, I think, produce at a high level. I think some other front seven guys that are really interesting to me is, again, a little bit older player, but Lavonte David at linebacker to me, along with Devin White, the two guys that could leave Tampa Bay. Those are two that are really going to be fascinating for me personally.
Now, as someone who follows the Chiefs, as someone who follows the Chiefs, do you think that they will make a move for a game-breaking wideout, like a not cheap, but a lower cost free agent, or are they going to go all in on a player like Xavier Worthy out of Texas?
I kind of expect them to make a low-cost move for sure, just so they're not totally handcuffed going into the draft. I think Brett Veach has kind of shown as someone I think picking near the end of the first round most of the time. It's something that he's kind of made public that he doesn't want to have just one singular need glaring at him going into the draft. So I think they're gonna add at least one body that way. Maybe they don't necessarily have to go first round right away at receiver. They can maybe wait till day two if they absolutely needed to. Say if they wanted to get a D tackle or another pass rusher instead, maybe on day one. So I don't really know how long it'll be till they sign someone, but I definitely think they'll get one for sure.
How can people interact with them on social media, and what's coming up on FPC Chiefs?
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter at Braden Holacek 9, BradenHolecek9, and the number 9. Also follow at FPC underscore Chiefs and then at Full Press NFL. Biggs obviously mentioned earlier the graphics we got going. Gonna be busy with that and throughout the day it's gonna be probably going all the way till dark and even later. So we'll be busy with those moves. But yeah, FBC Chiefs kind of just actually on wait and see mode a little bit right now from the Chiefs side of things to kind of see what they do. But I might actually do a more general NFL idea for fullpresscoverage.com. Maybe looking at the Kirk Cousins deal, what it kind of could mean for the Falcons as far as their offense in general as they look to be more competitive. So that's kind of actually the general idea I'm maybe looking to hit on tonight.
You can find me at Tequila Biggs and read all our stuff at fullpresscoverage.com. It's funny, when we look at days like this, we think of Adam Schefter, we think of Ian Rappaport, but before them, we had Chris Mortensen. Chris Mortensen passed away last week. Mort was a go-to. He was a no-nonsense, straight-up news guy, and he lived for days like this. Us, Braden, myself, we want to extend our condolences to the Mortensen family on behalf of Full Press NFL. Mort, we miss you, RIP. This has been another episode of the Full Press NFL podcast.